is the Tom Likas Show.
Everything you say is the fucking truth, man.
And now, from the New Normal Studios in Burbank.
There's no doubt about it.
Thank you for tuning in to the Tom Likas Show. This is where you hear us live Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. Pacific Time, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, 24-7 at blowmeuptom.com. You can hear us on our brand new free app. Get it at the App Store, get it at Google Play, or get it at TomEverywhere.com. That's TomEverywhere.com. Thank you for tuning in. Thanks for being part of the program. We appreciate it. Here we are together again. It's you and me, a bonus hour of the Tom Likas Show. Already another Tuesday. That's when we do these live. And joining us in studio, we have, I believe it's family law attorney Adam Sachs. Is that the Adam Sachs we got this week?
I'm afraid not, Tom.
Oh, I got criminal defense attorney Adam Sachs.
Yeah.
Well, say hello to the other Adam Sachs when you see it.
I certainly will try to remember, too.
Who can remember? I just had a four-day weekend, Adam, and I feel delicious.
Yes, I'm really glad to hear it. And you spent that mind-numbing 3 hours about Donald Trump, so I understand.
Mind-numbing? Really? Well,
we
held the audience today. We had a good audience today.
You know, Tom, one thing that you don't mention enough is that, you know, we're all from New York, and even Gary's from Jersey, as I recall.
How often should I be mentioning that?
Well,
and Gary's from New Jersey, and Dean is from originally Philadelphia.
Yes. And Mikey.
Mikey Timpson, New Jersey, also.
And then moved to Maryland.
You say we don't mention it often enough. I think people from New York mention it too often.
Well, the reason I mention it in terms of Trump is because I think that, you know, if you lived in New York for any amount of time as I did, you know, the guy is sort of the local buffoon, you know, and you definitely get a lot more exposure to him, especially in the past when he was building his buildings in New York and whatnot. And I think you may have taken much of your dislike to him during those days, I expect. I don't know that.
Well, of course I did. Of course I did. I mean, for Christ's sake, when I was a kid, I remember Trump's father was the developer.
Yeah, that's right.
His father's name was on signs all over town, and they were based, if I recall correctly, in Brooklyn.
Yes, right. He was building affordable housing, but I think that Donald forgot that stuff. That wasn't too interesting for him. He was more into the elite side of things. But I think an apartment in Trump Tower is about $20 million. So he wasn't exactly catering to the common man, as I recall. But in any case...
His father's name was Fred Trump.
Right. No, but he was building affordable housing, Tom. I remember that in, like, Jamaica, Queens,
I don't know what he was
and
building.
In Sheepshead Bay, Brooklyn, and all this sort of stuff.
I know his father was an immigrant. How ironic is that? And change his name, too.
Well, anyway, I guess it's just all where you're standing, right, Tom?
That's right.
So there was an interesting article in the Washington Post about a woman. She wrote a little thing about being a public defender. And, you know, we've sort of been ambiguous about a lot of this, but I have criticized public defenders. And this woman actually says, she's in New Orleans, I think, and she wrote an article, and this is on my Facebook if anyone wants to read it. And she basically said that she went to law school wanting to be a public defender, and that was her ambition, and she worked very hard and became a public defender. And it's a very difficult job. It's very low paying, but you get a lot of experience, of course. But what she says is that she has been unable to do her job for a very long time because she has so many cases. And the numbers that she's talking about are just astounding. She was talking about doing 50 to 100 trials in a month, which is hard to even believe. And I don't know how you could possibly do that with any quality of work. Certainly gathering evidence and everything else, I don't know how you could possibly do it. And I've often, you know, criticized people for thinking they're doing it smart and using a public defender or whatever. I think it's better to have private counsel. And obviously I am a private counsel, so I have some reason to feel this way, you know, personally. But we were also talking about culture and how culture sort of connects to how people feel, and certain people with different backgrounds seem to have different opinions about how you deal with criminal cases and whether you should hire counsel and whether you need a lawyer. And this certainly affects also family law. A lot of people call me after they've lost and after something disastrous has happened in court with the loss of their children or whatever, and they say, well, I thought I could do it without a lawyer, which is, you know, pretty ignorant so far as I can tell. I did a case this morning in civil court, and, you know, I just absolutely blew the other side out of the water. And I don't think that, you know, someone, you know, sort of filling out the papers themselves understands how to do that and how to deal with that. I think it's way too complicated. But I had a very interesting case, which came out very well, which was, you know, our very favorite DUI. And I brought the guy on. I want him to introduce to the audience. But one of the things that he's going to talk about, which I thought was especially interesting, was that around the same time that he got arrested, one of his friends got arrested also for the same thing, for DUI, and he ended up doing it with a public defender. And obviously we had very different outcomes, but he actually is going to tell the audience, I think, and I don't want to ruin it, I want him to tell, but that he actually had people that were his friends and his family as well that made fun of him for hiring a lawyer. How do you like that, Tom?
Well, I'm sure they did. Just like there are people who make fun of you for going to college.
Or for using a condom.
People make fun of you for speaking without an accent. Or
I didn't think about
that. Come
on,
there's a lot of that out there.
Well, I didn't realize that being a loser was a good thing, you know? So I think it's interesting how attitudes shape people's experiences. And we also talk about the real cost of DUI, which is not just the conviction, which is bad enough, but in the case of this friend of his insurance went up tremendously. So can we put him on, Tom?
Yes, we can put him on. He's here under the name Juan.
Juan, you there?
Hey, Tom. Thank you for having me on.
Hey.
Good.
How
you doing?
I'm doing great. How about you guys?
Fabulous.
Nice. Glad to hear that, Tom. Just wanted to get on the show right here and tell you a little story about how Adam helped me out with my DUI case. It was just a regular night. I was just driving home, and then I get stopped by a highway patrol. At that point, he pulls me over saying that I was tailgating a car, which clearly I wasn't, but, I mean, it was his excuse to pull me over, and right away you could imagine him going through his process. So I smell alcohol in the car, how much have you had to drink? So luckily I've been listening to the show for quite a while now, so I remember Adam telling me, never admit to you drink anything. And then right away he started telling me, he's like, okay, I need you to step out of the car. And he was very persistent, wanted me to do the breathalyzer, which, like I said, I've listened to the show quite often, so I was advised by Adam never to do that. So I refused that, and then you can imagine the cop starts getting aggravated and starts like, what? What do you mean you're not going to do the breathalyzer? Like, I'm not asking, I'm telling you. I was like, well, I'm sorry, officer. I don't want to upset you, but I know my rights, and I'd rather not do it. And then he starts going, okay, well, I'm going to need you to do a field sobriety test. Refuse that as well, too. And I just aggravated the police officer even more. I try to keep my cool. I think I did pretty well. I just told him, sorry, officer, but I would prefer to do a blood test. So officer takes me in. I drive to the hospital. They submit me to the blood test. Then after that, I spend the night in jail, which is really unfortunate. And then next morning, the first thing I did was call Adam. And Adam took care of everything. It's crazy because I didn't miss one work day. I didn't lose my license for one day. It was the best outcome I can ever want. He literally got my whole case thrown out, dismissed. He went through all my court hearings, didn't miss a day of work, didn't lose my license for a day. And just wanted to say thanks. Thanks to Adam and thanks to you, Tom, because I remember you always saying you never lose money hiring good attorneys on. It definitely worked in my favor this time again.
Yeah, and even if it costs you money, the idea is what you get what you pay for. And
absolutely.
I really believe, and it's cynical, I believe in this country you get all the justice you can afford.
Right. No, you're absolutely right.
If you hire a good attorney, you get a better outcome.
It's worth every single penny. It's worth every single penny. You don't lose money hiring an attorney. You never lose money hiring a good attorney.
I appreciate it. Juana, you had said that around the same time you had a friend that got arrested, right?
I did. Yeah, I did. It was just like a few weeks after I had a friend that went through the same situation as I did. I gave him Adam's number. I told him, call Adam. Here's his number. He never called Adam, and his response was like, what do I need an attorney for? What is he going to do? Blah, blah, blah. So he ends up going with the public defender, And at that point, I'm still going through my case. Adam's still handling my case. And he finishes his case. So he thinks that he's like, oh, my public defender was able to get it onto a lot reckless, blah, 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 making it seem like it's a great thing. Until he has to go file an SR-22. And now I think he's paying about $450 a month for car insurance. First, and then he got a suspended license for a few months. Then after that, he got a restricted license, something that I had to go through at all. He could have hired an attorney like I told him to. He decided to cheap out on it, but now he's going to be paying that monthly $400-something for car insurance for the next couple years. Plus, he has those points on his record, which was the biggest thing for me, not having this on my record. So this helps me out with my career or anything. It doesn't send me back in any way. It's like it never happened, but it's crazy because, like Adam was saying earlier, for some reason in the Latino community, they're very hesitant to hire attorneys. I don't know why. I guess it's more of a, I don't know if they feel they're going to get ripped off or it's more of a trust issue. They just feel like they're screwed already. But, I mean, I wanted, as soon as this happened to me, as soon as I got out, I was calling Adam, and I couldn't be happier with the results. It's just, it's great. I was like, until this day, since he told me about a week and a half ago, I'm still like, wow, like, worth every single penny. It was just the greatest outcome I can imagine.
Yeah, I really appreciate you saying that. You know, with this other guy, and this is the kind of a classic thing, Tom, you always have to remember this. Whatever the story was, you know, technically speaking, the public defender didn't do that bad of a job. I mean, if the guy was charged with DUI and he pled it down as a wet reckless, you know, that's considered relatively okay. But meanwhile, that's a criminal offense, so the guy's now a criminal. He's convicted, you know, of a misdemeanor. He has to go beyond probation. His license is going to be suspended and then restricted. He's going to have to pay all kinds of fines, and we're not talking a couple hundred bucks, thousands of dollars. He's going to have to go to DUI classes and a whole bunch of other stuff. But on top of it, see, this is what people don't even realize, the bigger effect. First of all, in career, if he wants any kind of job where he has to drive or he has to use a company car or whatever, he's never going to get hired for anything like that. And then beyond that, his own personal insurance is $400 or $500 a month. So, I mean, car insurance, you know, instead of costing him $1,000 or $1,500 a year, is going to start costing him $6,000 a year. And then that could be in place for many, many years like that. So, you know, a lot of people, when I talk to you, and you know this one, I mean, a lot of people are saying, get it over with, just take a plea, get it over with. But they're not thinking far ahead enough to recognize the real cost, which is much worse.
They just think of the upfront cost, which should really be the least of their worries, considering what the cost will be in the long period of time by not going with an attorney.
Now, I got to tell you, with respect to going to court, I've had, you know, a lot of situations where I see these people in court, and I feel so bad that you can see they're so scared. They're, like, so nervous. They're giving themselves a stroke, you know, like sweating bullets, you know? And, you know, in your case, as I recall, I think you never even went to court, right? I did all your appearances.
Not even once. Yeah. You took care of everything. Like, I didn't even miss one day of work out of this whole situation.
Yeah.
I would tell you, Adam, like, Adam, do you need to go with you? You're like, don't worry, Juan. Like, go to work. I got this. And you handled every single appearance. I didn't even have to show up once.
Yeah. So I think we're talking, I think I went like four times or something like that.
Yeah, it was about four times. And then
I remember you writing me, like, don't I have court this Thursday? And I was like, yeah, I got it.
Yeah, like, don't worry, I'm taking care of it. I was like, do you need to request a day off of work or something? You're like, no, don't worry about it. You're like, I got this.
Yeah.
And you went all the times necessary. And overall, it was just a great outcome.
Yeah, well, see, my goal is not to make a deal with them. My goal is to get it dismissed, you know.
Right, you won the case overall.
Yeah, a lot of people don't see that. A lot of people say, you know, well, you know, get it reduced, which, I mean, obviously depends on, you know, the circumstances.
Right.
I certainly try to get it reduced at the very, you know, minimum. But, you know, my goal, if I can, is to get it, you know, just gone, to get it dismissed completely, which is what we did in your case.
And
dismissed is the best, obviously, because then it's like it, you know, never happened in the first place.
It never happened, right.
Now, you helped yourself a lot, and I think you should, you know, point it out again in some way. People don't recognize this. You said that you listened to me on the show and you heard the show, and I really appreciate that, of course. But you actually did what I said on the show. And it's important for you to mention this because you did mention it, but it's really important to emphasize that you had to fight the cop a little bit. You had to stick to your guns, as it were.
Oh, no, I'm telling you, the officer was very persistent, like, I need you to do the breathalyzer. I need you to blow into this breathalyzer. And I kept on telling him, officer, I'm sorry, but I'm not going to do the breathalyzer. It got to the point where he thought I was kidding. He literally looked at his partner and they started laughing. Like,
right.
Are you serious? Like, you're telling me no? I'm
right.
Like, officer, I'm like, I don't want to be rude to you. I'm like, I'm just telling right now, I'm sorry, but I just prefer not to do the breathalyzer.
Now, were you scared? I mean, did you feel like they're going to shoot you or beat you up or something?
It was crazy because it was literally like, it was about 2 a.m. and I was driving right there about to reach the I-5 North
right.
from Glendale. And I pulled over in the first exit, which is like a little residential street. There was no lights around. It's
right.
2 in the morning. It was just me and the two officers.
Pretty intimidating.
Right. And at that point, there's no witnesses. There's nobody around. on a weekday at 2 a.m. in the morning,
right.
getting up on a residential street, just you know, two higher patrols went. They're really persistent. It got to the point, first they thought it was funny, then they started getting aggravated because
right.
I wouldn't comply with their demands. I wouldn't do their field sobriety test. I wouldn't. It's funny because he brings out his pen. He's like, all right, I need you to look at this. And I look away. I was like, I'm sorry, officer, I'm not doing your field sobriety test. I
right.
told you already. And he got to the point where he started getting persistent. I was like, officer, look. I was like, I understand that you want me to do the field sobriety test. I understand that you want me to do the breathalyzer. I would prefer, if I have to do a test, do a blood test
right.
from a registered nurse. So then I was like, personally, if I didn't listen to the show, I wouldn't even know that I had that chance.
Right.
And I had that opportunity to refuse these other two tests. But from hearing you guys on the show, I knew about this. So they drive me down to a hospital, which, my bad luck, it was empty that day. So I walked right in.
Oh. You know, I've had cases where the guys waited for hours and the cops eventually gave up.
I've heard.
Yeah.
I've heard about those. I was hoping while I was getting around that they were driving me over there, that would be the case. But I guess then I was like, great, it's the worst. It's like it's the luck just doesn't get any worse. And it was empty. So we walk right in. And then right there, so they bring up the nurse. They give you a form that you have to read and sign before
right.
they draw blood. So,
right.
I mean, I had to read it. So I took my time. I read it again. And then they finally draw the blood. But, I mean, like I said, I mean, I'm glad I listened to the show and I knew about
this. I just
this,
mean that
I'm sure there's a lot of people that don't even know that they have these rights.
No, I know, but I know that there are a lot of people that know, that have listened to the show and still did the breath test and still did the field test because they were given the sense by the police that they didn't have a choice.
Right.
And the cop is telling you to do it. You're saying no, and he's literally, like, not taking no for an answer, you know?
Right. Well, he really wasn't, yeah.
And that, you know, and you're in, like you say, you're kind of on the side of the road. Him and his partner are kind of like, you know, laughing at you, you know,
yeah.
and they're like saying, come on, asshole, do it, you know,
right.
And you're like, you know, you're in this weird situation with these cops. And I think what you did, which, you know, you said, you know, with respect, you know, I'm
yeah.
sorry, officer, I understand you want me to, but I'm not going to, you know,
right,
and he's
right.
like, what are you kidding, kid? You know, and you're like, no, I'm really not
yeah.
kidding. You know, I'm really sorry and blah, blah. I mean, I think it's very hard to maintain that. And, you know,
yeah.
the basis of what you did is the reason, partially, that I was able to get it dismissed. Because
yeah.
you stuck to your guns in terms of protecting yourself and your rights, you got the blood test, the whole circumstances were different. And by the way, one of the reasons that I got your case dismissed is I wrote a brief, what's called a trial brief, to the court and to the prosecutor.
And I
talked about... A lot of lawyers don't do this kind of stuff, especially, can you imagine a public defender who's got hundreds of cases? They would
never do
this.
Right.
But I wrote a brief, and I submitted it, and in the brief I wrote how the officers treated you and how they tried to undermine you and how you were trying to insist on your rights and how they were trying to draw a negative inference. And that's
right.
a very famous thing in the United States, that by, you know, asserting your rights, they are not allowed to draw any negative inference against you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the person who says, I don't want you to search my car, that doesn't mean that you're number one on the list that must have drugs in your car. You
right.
know? And so the fact that they treated you that way actually, in the end, worked in your favor.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think it took a lot of will on your part.
Yeah, and like I said, I remember you saying on the show too, like, no need to be nasty with the cops. Just
absolutely
tell them I'm not going to do it. And I was just, I was just remembering the show at that situation. I was like, all right, don't be nasty with the cops. Refuse the breathalyzer, refuse the field sobriety test.
Right.
And I told him every time, I was like, I'm sorry, officer, with all due respect, I'm not going to do your test. I choose to refuse to do it.
But the fact is, I guess people don't realize that they're going to keep asking.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
having
well,
when you
very
yeah, but when you when you finally say no, when you say, look, I'm not going to, that doesn't mean they stop, you know.
No, they don't. They keep going and get to the point where they're trying to make you believe that you don't have an option.
Right.
They really do. But in my mind, I was like, I already knew that I had that option. So.
Right.
But for them, they didn't know that I knew that. So they persistently try to make you feel like you don't have an option. Like you have to either blow on this breathalyzer or you have to do the skill sobriety tester.
Right.
One or the other or both.
Right. I've had people tell me that they had the machine and it's got like a straw. It's kind of weird, like a tube. And people told me that the cop was practically putting it, like, in their face, like, in their mouth, you know? And they're saying, look, I really don't want to. I'm sorry. And the cop's kind of shoving it, you know? Like, he's going to make you do it, you know? It's crazy. And, you know, in criminal cases, and obviously DUI, but, I mean, more serious criminal cases, a lot of times you're in the interrogation room or you're in the police station. Mm-hmm. And if you're smart, you'll say, you know, I don't want to talk to you. I want my lawyer present. You know, that's like the basic thing. And, you know, they read you your Miranda rights, which means that they can start, you know, gathering evidence against you and using it against you if you make statements, you know, that incriminate yourself.
Right.
And in those situations, a person will say, I want my lawyer here. And the cops are supposed to stop questioning you. But a lot of times the cops will still screw with you psychologically in the same way that they did to you. So well, they'll say, oh, okay, John, you know, you think you're smart. You want a lawyer. That's cool. But you're fucked, man. You're dead, you know, because we're going to do this to you and we're going to do that to you. And your last chance, man, this is your last chance to make a deal right now. And if you don't start talking, you know, once your lawyer gets here, then it's too late, you know.
Then this deal is going to awesome, supposedly great deal that they're giving you. It's going to be gone when your lawyer
gets here. A lot of people fall for that nonsense.
Yeah.
And when you're in the situation, I think people don't realize, you know, it's one thing to sort of talk about this or whatever on the radio or whatever, but when you're in the actual situation, you know, with the police on the side of the road or in the station or whatever, and, you know, it's very upsetting and intimidating. You know, they got guns, you know, they're big guys, you know, they're muscular, you know, they're like looking at you to kick your ass, you know? And I think that especially, you know, being in a Hispanic, for example, or a minority or whatever, you know, there's these stories, right, that the cops are racists, you know, and, you know, you don't know what's going to happen. So I think it's very, very difficult to kind of hold it out. But, you know, we can't argue with success because in the end, you know, the best thing happened is what happened to you is that your case was dismissed. So you're out without a scratch.
I know, and I still tell people that have been in these situations before, people that haven't, and they're still like, what? No way. How'd you pull that one off? I tell them, you don't lose money hiring good attorneys, like Tom always says.
I wish you could communicate it to all the boys. I really do. It really makes me sad because I got to tell you, you weren't with me. I went by myself, but even that day that I took care of your case the last time, a few weeks ago, when I got it dismissed, there were at least 20 other guys, seriously, 20 or more, guilty, 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 guilty. And I'm sorry to say, mostly blacks and Latinos. It's a fact. There's no two ways about it.
Oh, they're on their own with the public defender.
Yeah, most of them were by themselves or they had a public defender. And I didn't see maybe one other lawyer besides me. And he was taking care of his case, too.
Wow.
But the rest of them were getting it right up the ass. And it makes me sad to see. You know, it's like, come on, man. You know, look at the thing of the effect that it could have on their lives and their jobs and their work and you know, just the aggravation of being convicted of a crime, being on probation, you know, having a restricted license, paying all these freaking fines and
going through all these things, right? That could have just you could have avoided these things. You just hire a good representation and leave it up to the hands of the professionals instead of thinking that you can handle it on your own or that the public defender has your best interest.
Public defender, even if they have a good attitude when they start, and even if they are trying to do the right thing, they end up getting swept away in the exhaustion, I think, of just having so much responsibility and so many cases.
Well, like you said, didn't you were saying earlier how many cases they actually have
throughout astounding. A month. It's crazy.
Yeah.
If you look at the court systems right now, they're overburdened. A lot of the courts, like in L.A. County, they close 20 courthouses, you know? And a lot of the courtrooms are more, you know, compressed because there's more people and stuff. And the public defenders have the same budgetary problems. They got more cases than ever and less money to do them with. So the bottom line is if they used to carry 100 cases, now they're carrying 200 cases. So if you think you're going to get personal service, you can forget it. I mean, I talked to so many people where they were just trying to call them just to get them on the phone to ask a question or to verify a court date or something. And, you know, forget it. They never get a call back. You know, it's just not going to happen. And, you know, your case, I think, in the end was won on my trial brief. And I spent a lot of time writing it. And I can tell you right now, a public defender wouldn't even have bothered. No chance.
Well, they would have shown me the plea deal and be like, take it, it's the best
possible. It's a good deal, man. Sign here. Get it over with. That's life. But I really appreciate you coming on. Thank you.
Thank you for having me, Otto. And
thank you. Good call. And good outcome. I like it. There goes Swan.
That's the way it's supposed to go, Tom.
Love it. Guys, you don't, you never regret spending money on an attorney for any reason. But no matter whether it's you're in trouble and it's a criminal charge, or whether it's things like I spend money on all the time, everything from traffic tickets to protecting my intellectual property. I've never regretted spending money on a good attorney, never. And Adam has handled many, many things for me. So I'm speaking from experience.
Tom. Always enjoyable.
Absolutely. By the way, remind me to talk to you, Adam, because you did a job for me that I don't know if you're – I don't – maybe Gary told you about the outcome, but it's somebody who was a problem for me has completely disappeared.
Really? Gary?
Yes. Yes.
I'll tell you about Gary forgot to tell me.
maybe he was going to tell you after the show, but so I just wanted you to know.
I just scared the hell out of him. He's gone completely, eh?
Gone like the wind.
I seem to have that effect on people.
Yeah.
But Gary only tells me, Tom, when things go wrong. Then Gary greets
me. Well, I'm telling you right now that something went really right.
Great. Excellent.
I don't want to give the guy the satisfaction of being mentioned, so please don't say who it is.
No problem.
Or what it is. I'm just telling you, there's one guy that was a problem for me, and he has disappeared from the horizon.
Excellent.
Completely.
I'm very gratified.
I'm
going
to have to find out what you actually did, because...
I get ferocious when it comes to protecting you, Tom. Be careful.
Well, that's what I had a feeling, because I've never seen anyone disappear to this extent.
I love it. Well, that's great news.
Tell you what. All right, we're going to take a break. We have more calls now. Callers want to talk to Adam Sachs. He is criminal defense attorney Adam Sachs, and he is here to answer your questions. This is free legal advice for you, and the calls are coming. And here we go at 901-3000 Tom. If you have a legal question, Adam will answer it for you right now, free of charge. Just call us at 901-3000 Tom. Let's go, boys. It's 901-3000-866.
Free at TomEverywhere.com. Download the Tom Likas app now. 901-3000 Tom. This is the Tom Likas Show.
It's the Tom Likas Show. At 901-3000 Tom, a bonus hour of the Tom Likas Show with criminal defense attorney Adam Sachs. And your calls at 901-3000-866. Here is Zach in Dallas on the Tom Likas Show for Adam Sachs. Hello.
Hey, what's up, Tom?
Not much.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, what's up, Adam?
Hey.
Here's my scenario.
Sure.
I have a alleged incident on the 30th of March.
Okay.
And what I did was I'm convicted of a DWI, but I wasn't driving.
Really? That's odd.
Yeah. I was.
You're not convicted. You're accused. You mean?
Yeah. Yeah. That's what that. Yeah. Alleged. Excuse me.
Okay.
Or accused.
If you weren't driving, that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Well, because I was in my car, and before I was driving. To get to my destination. But, I guess the situation now is the fact that because I was in my car with the keys out of the ignition and everything.
Oh.
I was throwing up outside the window. And
oh my God!
Why
are we throwing up? Because you were drunk?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay. You know, there is some precedent about this, what they call intent to drive. And generally speaking, it's not just sitting in the car. You'd have to have the key in the ignition, even if it hasn't started.
No, keys were in my pocket and everything.
Oh.
And I've already because I had a friend that got in trouble for that, and actually got convicted. And he was it was back when I went to Texas State.
Yeah.
He was in the parking lot, and you know he got convicted of that.
I think I could win that case. I would fight that because the cases that I've read, and it has come up. I had a couple of people even lately that got stuck on the side of the road, things like that. The car had a flat tire or whatever, and also like you say, sitting in the car or in the back seat with their girlfriend, things like that.
Yeah.
And unless the key is in the ignition, it has to be in the ignition. That shows that you're starting to have intent to drive.
No, I wasn't. I mean, the car was off and keys were out the ignition.
Yeah.
And I mean, I can go so far as to say because, you know, I've courted everything that on the 10th of September.
Yeah.
Sorry, somebody's at my door.
But you have court this week. Do you have a lawyer?
Yes, sir.
Oh,
yes,
good.
Sir,
okay. All right. Well, the bottom line is, I'm not gonna lie.
The things that I did in the situation, because I'm such a avid, Likas listener.
Yeah.
I listen to y'all all the time.
Thanks.
Like all the time. So what do you mean?
What did you do in the situation? I don't understand.
Didn't answer a lot of questions.
Good.
That I didn't need to. So forth and so on. I don't want to really get too much into it, but I didn't answer the typical questions that a police officer would ask you in that situation.
Okay. Well, what I'm saying is, I mean, I know the exact circumstances. One second. If you were knocked out drunk, I'm just saying, for whatever the circumstances were.
Not knocked out.
Even if you were, okay?
Okay.
If you don't have the keys in the ignition. No, I'm not fighting you. I'm just trying to tell you, and you should talk to your lawyer about this. I hope your lawyer already knows. But
I respect y'all's opinion and yours especially.
Well, I appreciate that. But what I'm saying is that if you're sitting in the car, even in the driver's seat, and you don't have the key in the ignition, and I'm saying you had 100 drinks, okay? I don't think you can be convicted of a DUI because you're not driving, okay? Now, there are different interpretations of this. Sorry?
I said I'm in Texas. Does that matter?
Well, it's different in different states, but I still don't think it's going to be the same thing. You know, there are a lot of circumstances where people get into, and we've seen these at the checkpoints, you know, different kinds of situations where someone's walking to their car or the car got stuck, like I said, and walking from the car. And I have a few cases like that. And if you keep your mouth shut, if you say to the cop, I was driving, I was going to drive, that's one thing. But if you kept your mouth shut and you didn't say anything, and, you know, by the circumstances, you could say, I had too much to drink, and I had a headache, I didn't feel well, whatever, and I pulled over and I was going to sleep it off. And so you're not driving. And when the cop came upon you, he did not observe the crime. He sees you sitting in a car. That doesn't mean a thing. Okay, and if you don't have the key in the ignition, you don't have the key in your hand, you know, like you're about to start the car, the car's already started, then there's no intent, there's no driving. So it's the same kind of thing. I talked to someone lately who told me that he got arrested for being drunk in public, and he was at some state fair or something, and he kept saying to me, you know, they didn't give me a breathalyzer. I said, well, of course they didn't give you a breathalyzer, you weren't driving, you know. You're drunk in public. I mean, people don't realize this. You know, the cops can't just do these things to you all the time. You know, as much as the, things are a little crazy in the United States and you see how the police have gotten overly aggressive and militarized, we still have the Constitution, thank God, and we still have certain rights. So I'm really pleased. You know, I understand you have court in a couple of days, but I'm really pleased to hear you have a lawyer and just, you know, talk to him, make sure he's very mindful of your circumstances and the story, and you should be fine.
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
Okay. Yeah, I just, man. Yeah, for all the people out there, do not drink and drive. Do not be associated with it or anything.
That goes without saying.
I mean, seriously, like, don't. Well, I'm just saying, like, you know, don't even have like one or two shots and drive or something like that, and you know, just think you're going to be okay or whatnot, because that's what I did, but I was with other people, you know, and at that situation, in that certain time and situation, just like you said, I wasn't driving, so I got a little bit more, you know. Just wanted to call, excuse me, get a little more clarity on the situation at hand.
Thanks a lot.
All right. Zach, thank you. Let me get Derek in Portland, Oregon. Derek, you're on with Adam Sachs. Hello.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Adam. I'll try to get to the point.
Sure.
I don't think too many people specialize in what I got for a ticket. I was camping this weekend out on tribal lands here in Central Oregon. And you need to have a permit besides the Oregon fishing license. You need to have a permit for the tribal grounds if you're not a member of the tribe.
Right.
And we were stopped the day before. I had the rain jacket on, and I put the permit for the tribal one in the rain jacket. The next day we went back out, and I didn't have it. And, of course, we get stopped that day. We ended up getting I got a $500 ticket. And so with the ticket, it's not really worth, you know, with $500, look, it's not my license, it's not my kids. I'll probably have to take a day off of work, you know, and miss like $200, $250 for a day of work. But to go in, I already called the court, and she said, yeah, bring in your paperwork, and, you know, he'll probably either reduce it or just throw it out if you show him the right thing.
Right.
How do I plea when I go in and do that? They're on the back. Do I do, like, on the back of it says no contest, or do I file a trial for a request for a trial?
You're going to request a trial. No contest is pretty much the same as guilty, okay? It's only technically slightly different. So basically, you have apparently the correct permit. You just didn't have it with you. So that's sort of like a fix-it ticket. You probably still need a lawyer. I wouldn't necessarily want to do this myself, but theoretically, you go to the tribal court and you're asking for a trial. And in the preparation for that, you ask to talk to the prosecutor, and you say, "Look, I made a mistake. I didn't bring my thing with me and my permit, and here it is." And, you know, they'll verify it, and that should be the end of it, you know, unless they're really spiteful. Now,
okay,
your situation could have been worse. You could have, let's say, not had the permit. I think even in that case, if you were willing to apologize and buy the permit, that probably would have worked also. I don't think that these tribal things – I know what you're talking about, the fishing permits and the camping permits. I don't think that they're trying to screw you up, you know. I think what ends up happening is that they end up, you know, getting into these situations where they want people to have the permits, and if you don't have it with you, or you don't have it, or you didn't get it, generally speaking, if you buy it in good faith and you show it to them afterwards, as long as you don't keep doing that again and again, particularly the first time you do it, they're going to let it slide. I think
you're
in a good position
for
that.
Since this is a two-hour drive out there, should I just request a trial by mail? Or should I go there the first time and request a trial and then...
I know it sounds like a real, you know, a nuisance in terms of wasting, missing work and all, but, you know, unless you, you know, you should go in person and, you know, unless you want to send a lawyer, that's probably a good idea too. You know, I'll say you're missing the day of work, spend a few $100 and have a lawyer just go, you know, square it away. Not the
square
end of the world.
For one, Derek, I stay out of court as much as possible. I always send my lawyer.
I agree.
Right, Adam?
No doubt.
Have I ever
it.
Been in court with you, Adam? Never. Adam goes, does the dirty work. I don't have to see how sausage is made.
I usually call you afterwards with the shocking news that it's all dismissed.
Yes.
One more question, though. Where would I go? Would I call back to the courthouse to see if they had what lawyers they would have available?
I think the more you're doing it yourself, the more you're screwing up. I really mean it. I know it sounds crazy, but I'm serious. If you want, you can call me after the show, and I'll give you someone in Oregon or something. But even if it's a few hundred dollars, I'm telling you, it's going to be a lot less aggravation getting it closed up and having to deal with it later. And you're going to end up having a whole story. The fine is going to double and triple. I have people calling me with tickets that originally were $300 and now it's $3,000, you know? So that's something that's just best avoided.
All right, Derek, thank you. Let's say hello here to Rob at Santa Rosa. Rob, you're on with Adam Sachs. Hello.
Hey, Rob.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
What's up?
Great.
Hey, all right, so, Adam, real quick, good
sure.
to talk to you, by the way.
Of course, thank you.
My question is this. Okay, so long story short, I originally got a DUI, and I got a blood test done. This was back in September of last year, and my test came back as being like 0.28. Or
oh
something like that. So it was like really
high. Are you serious?
High.
0.28? How did you even stand up?
I don't know.
3.5 times the legal limit.
That's pretty incredible, dude.
It was 0.26. It's 0.26, yeah.
That's impressive.
It was up there. Now here's the thing is that I had a public attorney, and he basically told me that I needed to do a liver panel test, because I guess apparently if you have liver problems, that could basically, the alcohol could stay in your system longer.
Oh, okay. So that's interesting.
So I ended up going that route. Long story short, he wanted too much and I didn't have the money, so I just basically pleaded no contest, I believe. Now, coming to January of this year, I got another DUI. But the way
what's going on, man? Why don't you go to like AA or something? You got a drinking issue of some kind. How could you get another one?
Right. Well, this is the way that this one happened. Is that okay? So I was getting off of work at 10 o'clock, 10 p.m. and that's already stamped. That's like, you know, that's on a piece of paperwork, you know, that I left at 10 o'clock. Now it takes me about 30 minutes to get from Petaluma to Santa Rosa. So what I did is I went straight home, but on the way I stopped at the 7-Eleven. I got a 3-pack of tall cans and I got some ice cream. So I decided to go home. I parked my car in my driveway, not on the side street, but actually in my driveway. And what I did is I primered my hood because I wanted to finish, because I work on cars and stuff like that. So I wanted to finish primering my hood. So I was out there spray painting, and I was out there doing that. And while I was waiting for the paint to basically to dry, I ended up getting my stupid ass ended up getting it into my car and passing out. Now with the music on.
Was the car on? Hold on.
That means the key was in the ignition.
Maybe.
No. The car was not on. It was just. the first one. So the
Tom's how do you right, turn the radio on yeah. without putting the key in the ignition?
I think Tom's right about that.
No. There's two steps, because the first one goes to, like, you know, lights and stuff like that, and then the second one actually turns on the vehicle.
Yeah, but so the
but
first.
But you have to have the key in, right?
Yeah, exactly. I did have the key.
So the key was in,
so that's it.
And it was turned halfway to starting the engine.
I love it.
Exactly.
That's not the same as the guy who got in the car and the key was not in the ignition.
Yeah.
Your key was in the ignition.
Yes, it was in the ignition.
And one could argue that your intention was to drive, right?
Yes, I'm afraid so.
Here's the thing is that they checked because of my clauses. In my first DUI they were going to originally, one of the clauses was going to be search and seizure at any time, where they could literally come to my house, because it's informal probation, and literally check, go through my stuff to make sure I don't have alcohol. But
yeah, but if you're on probation from the first conviction, you've lost a lot of your rights.
Right, but I don't have that anymore. They took that off, so I don't have a search and seizure anymore. But what I do have is I have no drinking at bars. I can't be around alcohol. I can't be in possession, any of that stuff of alcohol. So here's the thing. In the backpack, he goes through my backpack and he finds that 3-pack of beer that I had purchased at 7-Eleven at about 10:30. Because I got off work at 10 and it takes me 30 minutes to get back at 10:30. Now here's the thing is that I end up going and I ended up doing my due diligence, and I ended up getting a receipt of my credit card number of that time showing at 10:30 of me purchasing that beer. Because they were basically saying, well, you're drinking beer, but the beers weren't even open, so that'd be impossible anyways, because it's a three-pack. You know how they come in three packs? The Budweiser ones, they come like, and there's like cellophane wrapped or whatever around them. So anyways, I get a receipt of that basically showing me that I purchased that alcohol. There's no evidence of anybody seeing me drive. And second of all, the reason why they even showed up was because of the noise complaint. Because at 3:30 in the morning, I had music going, and I have a little system. So basically, somebody complained about music being on at 3:30 in the morning. So first of all, my question is this, is that can they give me a DUI on my own property?
Dude, you have a problem with alcohol, seriously.
Right.
You got to deal with that first, okay?
Right. You're right.
Start going to AA, please. You don't want to kill someone, okay?
Right. I got you.
This bull you're talking about, 3 a.m, and you got to leave the music blasting, and the cops are coming, and you got the three-pack of beer. You're not supposed to have any alcohol. Come on.
Yeah,
if you've gotten 2 DUIs in less than 1 year, you've got a serious issue to deal with, okay?
Right.
Please, it's a tragedy. There's so much beauty in life, and just to be spending your time drunk and ending up getting into accidents and stuff, it's not cool.
You're right, man. You're right. And the thing about it is that the best thing that happened about this, to be honest with you, is the fact that about the whole liver panel thing, on the 10th, I have to go back, and they're going to have my analysis, and they said that my enzymes in my liver were just like, He didn't even want to tell me over the phone. He was like, you just need to get over here. He was like,
right,
so we need to talk to you.
You're hurting your health.
Wow, really?
Well, Tom, the guy's wiping out his liver, basically.
No, I understand that, but as this conversation is going on, we're hearing this is a bigger and bigger problem.
Right. I have a problem, Tom. I do. I ain't gonna lie. It was because back in the day, like, you know, it's a couple of years ago, what I used to do is I used to pop pills and drink all the time. That was like my thing, like hydrocodones and doing that and drinking. And
we're gonna put you on with Dino. Dino's going to talk to you, okay?
All right.
Yes, seriously. And we'll figure out what we can do
absolutely.
For you.
Absolutely, absolutely.
All right, let's take another one here. I've told you always ask me about the phone response.
Yes.
Some days it's huge.
I see that.
And some days it's not as huge. That's the way it is.
The moon, Tom?
I don't know what it is. No idea. I think after Labor Day, people are back to business, for one thing. Rob in San Francisco, you're on with Adam Sachs. Hello.
Hello, how are you?
Hey, Rob.
Great.
Adam, I'm not sure if you remember me. We spoke a couple years ago about my child support case. I used to live in San Antonio, Texas.
Okay.
And I didn't get a chance to retain you, but wanted to talk to you off the air about that. But the reason I was calling today was I wanted to paint a scenario for you back in 2007.
Okay.
I allegedly committed insurance fraud.
Ooh, naughty.
And so the scenario goes... This is how I allegedly got caught, I drove two of my personal vehicles over the border and came back with only one.
Uh-huh.
And filed a police report that one was stolen.
So what happened to the stolen one?
The CHP has a stolen vehicle task force, and they told me they went into Mexico to actually physically look for it, and they found it and brought it back to the United States.
Okay.
And so what they did was the insurance company assigned it to what they called a special investigator, and I ended up meeting him at a Denny's, and of course he presents evidence that says, hey, two of your cars went in, but only one came back, and then you file a stolen vehicle report.
And you had this meeting at the Denny's with a special investigator without an attorney present, eh?
Correct.
Okay, that speaks for itself, right?
So at that point, within a couple of days after that meeting, I was placed under arrest.
Uh-huh.
And this by an agency in Orange County. Well, here's the tricky part that has always bothered me since 07. The police officer, they first went to my house. I wasn't there because I was working at the time that they were looking for me. They showed up at my work. And let's put it this way, not to be too specific, I was in the same line of work at that time. And so they surrounded, about 15 police officers surrounded the office I worked for and found me in the office at work and arrested me. So I went to jail. I was suspended from my job. And while the case was pending, it went to the HR department. They allowed me to go to light duty while the case was pending. I did retain a private counsel. It was $25,000 later to hire a private counsel out of Beverly Hills. And basically they pled down to, I was looking at 20 years in prison with the charges that were filed against me. And they pled it down to 90 days house arrest with credit for time served, 3 years probation. And a year and a half into the supervised probation, they brought it down to unsupervised probation.
Okay.
And then they actually ended up.
And all of this is 8 years ago, right?
Right. So the reason why I was calling is they made me, it was originally a conviction of a felony. About 3 years after all that, they brought it down to a misdemeanor.
Right.
I was forced to resign my position at my job at that time.
But you know, but you told me this whole story years ago, and we went over this whole thing, and you still never hired me, right? So what do you want to do exactly?
Well,
what you're talking about is a long time ago, right? And it's all resolved, and you had an attorney, and you served your sentence, which was, it could have been a hell of a lot worse.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
So what exactly are you obsessing on this for?
Well, I'm obsessing on, I want to see if it's possible to have the document that was signed that made me not eligible for rehire, kind of have that retracted.
We talked about this, and I told you I would work on it, but you never hired me. So we never did.
Okay.
So I have a weird feeling that you just want to complain about this, and you just want to talk about it, and that's great, but, you also have to be a doer. And if you want to do something about it, then you have to put it into motion.
Okay.
And I don't know why you're not doing that. Some people get stuck. Maybe you are. I don't know. But if you want to do something, then, tell me when we'll pull the trigger, and I'll take care of it for you.
Okay.
But I think I spoke to you at least, I think it's at least 2 years ago. And you told me the exact same story word for word, and you haven't done anything in 2 years. So maybe you don't want to do anything.
Well, the issue I've been kind of dealing with is kind of taking the precedent over that is the child support case. That's taken up most of my time.
By the way, I told you I'd help you with that too. And you didn't hire me for that. Wait a second. We went over that case also, and you sent me documents, and you never hired me. So nothing got done on that either.
So what's the deal? You trying to get some free legal advice here and not pay for it? Is that the deal?
No. I don't have a problem paying for it. Obviously, I did retain an attorney at one point, so no, I don't have a problem paying for it.
10 years ago.
Yeah, but what about today?
I would be more than happy to retain him as soon as I could.
Tom, remember that book you talked about by Apinsky? I'm trying to remember the name. That talking about doing something is the opposite of doing something?
No, it was Ospensky. P.D. Ospensky.
Yes, thank you.
And it talked about the difference between talking about doing something and actually doing it, and how most people see them as the same thing.
Right.
People saying things like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go back to school. They say that, but they don't actually go, but they feel like they did because they had the right intentions.
Well,
their heart was in the right place.
I talked to a lot of people like this gentleman who are perfectly reasonable people, and I don't just think he's being a mooch, trying to get free advice, but, they talk to me about interesting things that I could help them with, and I'm certainly willing to, and I'm willing to make, some kind of payment arrangements or who knows what, and then they just don't follow through. I don't know.
Is that now? Let me ask the caller. Is that true?
There's a hidden issue. I've fallen into a really, really deep depression over a couple of issues in my personal life.
Yeah, maybe
so
you wouldn't be so depressed
like
if you took care of this.
Through with everything.
Yeah, but
maybe part of your reason for being depressed is you got all this stuff hanging over you.
Yeah, if I took care of this, you'd feel a lot better.
Well, and that's the issue is that's what I think, and I've been trying to go to a therapist as much as I can to help me out of my depression. And according to what she said is I have I'm trying to self-destruct. And I'm causing these negative issues to impact my life, and that's why I keep doing negative things against myself, you know, like what we talked about, and then, you know.
Listen, I'm going to interrupt here because we don't have all night to be your therapists. I'm going to put you on hold with Dean, and Dean, once again, is going to put you in touch with Adam. And then it's up to you to pull the trigger.
And I'll be the therapist.
If you don't pull the trigger, then the bottom line is you are self-destructing. So here's your opportunity once again. Maybe this time, you send the retainer check over to Adam so you can get this thing going, and then we see what happens. All right? There he goes. Thank you. We could be here all night with him. Seriously. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to tell you how you can get in touch with Adam and more. Stay right there.
Tom Likas, the Internet's most listened to call-in show. 901-3000-TOM. This is the Tom Likas Show.
It's the Tom Likas Show. At 901-3000-TOM, that's our number. 901-3000-TOM, 901-3000-8668. Bonus hour of the Tom Likas Show with criminal defense attorney Adam Sachs. Now, Adam, if any of our listeners want to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
You can give me a call toll-free at 1-800-340-7320. That's 1-800-340-7320. Check my website, www.adamlawyer.com, and send me an email, which I answer personally, adam@adamlawyer.com.
All right, let's try one more of these calls here. Let's say hello to Jay in Philadelphia. Jay, you're on the Tom Likas Show. Hello.
Hey, it's great to be talking with both of you. How are you both doing this evening?
Great, thanks.
I'm doing great.
That's good. I have a question. From when I was 19 or 20, before I was 21, I was driving over the summer. I was a camp counselor, and I had to run into town to pick up a few things and run back to the town pretty quickly. And I was speeding a little bit. A cop pulls me over and pretty much says that because I'm under 21 and he suspects me of DUI, that I must, accept the breathalyzer. Is that true or is that the cops just kind of fucking with me?
That's not true. But there is a difference being under 21, which is that it's zero tolerance. So if you're an adult driver in California, if you're under 0.08, so that's considered to be like one drink, like a beer or one hard drink, you could get a 0.6 or 0.07, and then you're still considered legal to drive, even though you have some alcohol in your system. When you're under 21 or 21 and under, it's zero tolerance, so you have to register 0.00. But you can insist on a blood test, and as I've said, the breath test is not accurate. It's not to be counted on.
All right, sounds good. Well, I think that's it sounds like that's not, I think people want to get over and watch the Dodgers game, which is finally on television for the entire Southern California TV audience.
But what happened? The officer lied to you?
I guess he must have. I mean, he throws the breathalyzer in my face. You know, of course, I had not been drinking. It registered as zero. This is before I knew about you, Adam.
Okay.
This is before.
But what happened? So, it was 0.0 and he let you go?
Well, I mean, it was 0.0, but he didn't really let me go then and there. He wanted to retest it, and so he calibrated it.
I've always seen the cops, when it comes out zero or whatever, they're so disappointed, you know? They say, yeah. No, the machine's not working right, you know.
Yeah.
They want to make sure they get you.
Yeah. But that's pretty much it. Tom, hearing those past two calls, I think you might want to consider having a Paul from Sydney hour every other week or every month or so, because it seems like there's, unfortunately, a lot of P1s out there that could definitely use some services of the Sydney counselors.
Yes, a lot of people could use some services that we don't yet provide, but you just never know what we'll provide in the future. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Adam, again, how can people get in touch with you?
Toll free, 1-800-340-7320.
There we go. Adam Sachs, go check out Adam, and he can certainly help you out if you're in some of the situations like the people calling in here. Now, remember, you may have missed part of this hour. Maybe you missed the chance to call in live if you're listening to a replay or if you're listening to us on demand. But never fear. There'll be another live Adam Sachs bonus hour coming up on Tuesday at 6 p.m. Pacific Time, 9 p.m. Eastern Time.
The entire Tom Likas experience in your pants.
Get the app. Now,
901-3000 Tom. This is the Tom Likas Show.
From the New Normal Newsroom, it's time once again for Likas 101 News for Guys. I'm Gary Zeno.
He's not president material at all.
We're brought to you in part by Beer Magazine. Go to blowmeuptom.com, click on the Beer Magazine banner, and get your Likas discount to a year's subscription to the now fully digital magazine devoted to beers.
Flippity blip.
Beer Magazine, nude in the nude, North Carolina 17-year-old being charged as an adult and facing 10 years in prison for having shared naked photos with his 16-year-old girlfriend.
Nice going, dummy.
The two of them texting him back and forth. And apparently that ain't cool.
No. You are really playing with fire when it's under 18.
In North Carolina, you're considered an adult at 16 years old as far as being charged. But you must be over 18 to have explicit text photos or videos.
Right, so that's where they draw the line.
A little bit of a double standard.
It's not the same. 16 is not the same.
Yeah. You're an adult, but you're not an adult.
Not quite an adult. You could do some adult things, but not explicit text, photos, or videos.
Our boy is facing 2 counts of second-degree sexual exploitation and 3 counts of third-degree exploitation. He's so basically fucked. That's kind of the situation. He's just a horny kid sharing some pics with his girl.
He was having a great time, except not in the eyes of the Cumberland County Sheriff's Department.
And you're not safe if you're in the UK. A dude uploaded naked photos of his ex to Facebook after they split. He's been jailed. He's 22 years old.
Here's that revenge porn.
Yeah. Apparently he taunted his 19-year-old ex and posted explicit snaps, as they say, in Britain.
Probably Paul says that to an Australian.
To a fake profile after she ended their 10-month relationship.
It looks like a friend has a good time in life,
nice picture.
With the life preserver. Yeah.
So damn it.
Yes.
Yeah, it looks like this kid wasn't really thinking things through. And the girl is so young, and two, she can't be named for legal reasons. Mm-hmm. But she did break down in tears. And after her own family had said they saw the pictures.
Yeah, well, yeah. He set up a fake profile and then shared it with all her friends and family.
And those are images that they'll never get rid of.
Yeah, not a good situation. In Pennsylvania, a guy arrested for sharing nudes, snapshots of girls from Snapchat in a Dropbox. And his current girlfriend apparently stumbled upon these because she got his login for his email, and there was a link to a Dropbox, and she found all these pics from Snapchats that this dude, all these selfies of these girls that shared with him, thinking they were just going to go up and smoke.
Yeah, not correct, because they stayed on that Dropbox, and Sheila went right to the link, and that he had for sure the password and everything saved, so bummer.
That's Brandon Berlin, apparently from North Penn High School.
Yep.
His yearbook quote is it literally says, "I probably had your pics." I probably had your pics.
It looks like he just changed it to say, "I guess I'm fucked."
Right.
The Montgomery County District Attorney, it looks like a woman, our friend, is going to be tried as an adult in criminal court.
Yeah. In Bremerton, a 42-year-old man arrested Friday evening after police found him sunbathing on top of a travel trailer in the parking lot of a Winco grocery store. He was completely naked, 100% naked, just sunbathing on top of the trailer.
Well, something goes along with Fuji apples in a grocery store, and that's the sunbathing in the parking lot.
When the cops arrived, they asked the guy to come down. He says, "Sir, you got to throw me my pants. I got nothing on."
Police basically were called at 6 p.m. on Friday to say that their friend was in the process of destroying the roof. That's what they said. Come on.
A Boston police detective facing charges for open and gross lewdness after he was allegedly spotted naked and masturbating in a hotel parking lot.
That, and by the way, knowing hotel parking lots, it was covered by 6 different cameras. So our friend is now a star.
A passerby called the cops to report that a balding white man, about 6 feet tall, was outside Spring Hill Suites.
Oh, yeah, I've stayed at a Spring Hill.
Standing next to a black SUV and pleasuring himself.
They have a good continental breakfast. You can make your own waffles there. Delicious.
Apparently, this wasn't the dude's first rodeo. The day before, a couple saw the same person jerking off on the hood of a red Volkswagen Golf.
The problem was the Golf belonged to the employee. By the way, that employee was cool because all the person did was move the car and didn't call the police on.
Please don't jerk on my hood. My beautiful Golf. A couple of pick alerts for you. Check out Bella Hadid in GQ.
Yeah, this is Gigi Hadid's sister. And
how old is she?
They're rich.
Yes, I know.
Filthy rich. Yeah. Mohammed is their father, who was a builder of massive homes here in Los Angeles. And they got some dough. I think she is definitely over 18, but I don't believe 21 yet.
Mm. Also, check out Lindsay Hancock, a model, actress, and last name Hancock. That's all you read.
She is really something else.
I'm telling you, this girl has amazing stuff on her Instagram account, and I don't know what the hell she, you know, model, actress, artist, all this other bull. It doesn't matter.
Who cares?
She's semi-nude.
She delivers, by the way, tits, ass, everything. Mm. Our girl delivers.
Plenty more news for guys.com. That's going to do it for us. I'm Gary. He's Dino.
You can make your own waffles there.
Check out the podcast, GaryandDino.com is where you find it. Brand new show every single Friday. Just go to GaryandDino.com from the New Normal Studios in Burbank. We're back to the Tom Likas Show right after this.
This is the New Normal.